Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Today on Wings, Australian pediatrician and anti-nuclear activist Dr. Helen Caldicott, recorded by Stacey Pettigrew at the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, November 13, 2010. Here's Stacey.
The call for clean energy has increased with the growing awareness about climate change, and nuclear power is often touted as a solution to the climate crisis. Currently, the 440 nuclear power reactors operating in 30 countries provide 15% of the world's electricity. Over 60 new reactors are under construction in 15 different countries, including Russia, China, and South Korea. In the United States, 20 new reactors have been proposed. Prominent Australian physician and anti-nuclear activist Dr. Helen Caldicott warns us about the dangers of a nuclear future. In this first part of a two-part series, she discusses the health effects of radioactive pollution and argues that nuclear power does indeed contribute to global warming. In part two, she discusses nuclear accidents, weapons, and the promise of renewable energy.
In Australia, we have 40% of the world's richest uranium. Uranium has two uses, for nuclear power and for bombs. We don't have nuclear power in Australia because it's too dangerous for us. We just export the uranium so everyone else can have the joys of nuclear power and radioactive waste. Uranium has two isotopes, 235 and 238. This is the fissionable one, and it's present in 0.7%. It must be enriched to 3% for use in nuclear power, and above 50% you've got bomb-grade material. And the bomb used on Hiroshima was a uranium bomb. This stuff left is called depleted uranium, not that it's depleted of radiation, but it's depleted of uranium-235. America's been conducting a nuclear war in Iraq and Afghanistan. They have used uranium-238, which I said is depleted. It's radioactive waste. It's 1.7 times more dense than lead. And as momentum equals velocity by mass, if you make a shell out of it, it's tremendously fast and it slices through the other fellow's tank like a hot knife through butter. But it's pyrophoric and 80% of it burns, producing tiny, tiny little particles less than 5 microns which get into the lung. The children play in the tanks that have been destroyed. There's powdered uranium all over the place in Iraq, especially Basra and Fallujah. Uranium-238 has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. It is excreted in the semen. It's excreted in the urine. It concentrates in bone, causing bone cancer and leukemia. In Fallujah, where there was a massacre that we don't really know about, the incidence of cancer's gone up 25 times in the children, 2,500%, and up to 80% of babies being born are grossly deformed, with anencephaly, no brains, single eyes, no arms, so much so that the doctors have told the women not to get pregnant. This is contamination of the cradle of civilization for the rest of time, where writing was developed, arithmetic, law. This is more than a war crime. America's killed over 1 million people in Iraq while everyone sits drinking their lattes. It's like the good Germans. Well, we didn't really know what was in those carriages. Yeah, we saw the smoke coming out the chimney. It smelt sort of sweet. We didn't know what it was. The good Germans committing genocide. And now in Afghanistan, one of the poorest countries on earth. What they say we're going to stay there till we win. Win what? What? No one's ever won in Afghanistan. How dare we be there with the most sophisticated weapons the world's ever seen? And it's a nuclear war. Oh, there aren't nuclear explosions, but it's a nuclear war. I wrote an op-ed for the New York Times. They wouldn't publish it, about the medical effects. Okay, so we've got a lot of work to do. Uranium decays to a series of daughters. So one of the daughters is radium. Madame Curie, as you know, refined uranium, radium, and she used to walk around with a little piece of it in her lab coat pocket playing with it because she really liked it. It happens to be a calcium analog. It goes to bone where it can induce bone cancer or leukemia, and she indeed actually didn't die of leukemia, but a leukemia sort of cousin called aplastic anemia, which is actually what Carl Sagan died of. It's when the whole bone marrow stops producing any blood cells, white, red, and platelets. Her daughter also died of leukemia. Another product is radon gas, which is very carcinogenic, and when you inhale it into the terminal bronchi, just a little tiny bit can irradiate a very small volume of cells. And because the radiation is alpha, very high energy radiation, most of the cells within that volume die. But as radiation decreases with the square of the distance on the periphery of that volume, some cells remain viable. They can mutate and become cancerous. So if you get a mutation in the regulatory gene that controls the rate of cell division, you can develop cancer. So that 30 to 50% of men who've mined uranium in the past have died and are dying of lung cancer. Particularly, though, if you're a smoker, because you lose the ability for the cilia to waft particles up to your throat and swallow them. You can't clean your lungs as well. It's like a broom that's not effective. And so, therefore, the radon tends to stay down there. Another one of the daughters actually is polonium. Do you remember that Russian in London who was given some polonium in his tea? He didn't know, but apparently this is incredibly toxic, just the tiniest amount. And remember seeing the photographs of him dying with his hair falling out, looking pale, and within 2 weeks he was dead. That's called acute radiation illness. If a person receives over 250 rems of radiation, whole body, then within a few days their hair starts falling out. The actively dividing cells of the body die. Hair, GI, gut. So you get awful nausea and vomiting and bleeding, diarrhea, and the blood cells die. And then you die the way an AIDS patient dies of massive infection or hemorrhage. And that's how he died. Can't remember his name. So these are all called the waste from refining uranium is called radioactive tailings. And indeed, I'm going to a place called Port Hope on Monday, which is on Lake Ontario, where they first refined radium for watch dials. Remember, the women used to paint the watch dials with radium-enriched paint and lick the brushes so they're really pointy. And because radium goes to bone, many of those women died of bone cancer of the maxilla and mandible or leukemia. That's a classical, not study, but epidemiological survey. And then they started making uranium for the bombs at Port Hope, and up to 1957 they made all the uranium for the nuclear weapons in America. And now they're making uranium for nuclear power plants all over the world. It's one of the biggest uranium facilities in the world. Now the town, it has been built on these tailings. It's a radioactive town. There are over 4,500 dwellings and buildings built on the tailings. There was a big clean-up a few years ago by the Canadian government. They're going to do another clean-up and remove 3.2 million cubic metres of radioactive soil and take it just south of the town on Lake Ontario and build a children's playground on top of it. Children are 10 to 20 times more sensitive to radiation. They get cancer and leukemia much more readily than adults. Women are more sensitive than men. Older people are more sensitive than younger people. And fetuses are about 1,000 times more sensitive to radiation than adults. But the nuclear industry uses a standard man as their standard, a 70-kilogram, white, healthy, young male. We should use a standard fetus. In fact, one X-ray to the pregnant abdomen doubles the incidence of leukemia in that child. So these uranium tailings, towns who live around uranium, they just dump them on the ground in huge, huge heaps. So the radon blows in the wind to be inhaled. The radium is soluble, gets into the water supply, and concentrates by orders of magnitude in the algae, in the crustaceans, in the little fish, in the big fish, and then finally in us, because we stand at the top of the pyramid of the food chain. So these elements concentrate. So people who live around there and take their water from the local creek, and indeed the water from Port Hope is taken from Lake Ontario, where they're dumping this waste, and where the waste is in the town, the radium is soluble, it leaks, gets into the creek where there's a lot of trout and salmon, and they catch them in the spring, and then it gets into Lake Ontario where they get their drinking water. But the Canadian government and Cameco and the Atomic Energy Commission of Canada said, there's no worry, it's low-level radiation, don't worry about it. Now, what I'm saying to you is, if you have a chest X-ray, it is low-level radiation, and the cells that are affected, i.e. all the cells in your chest, get a very, very low dose. However, if you inhale some radon, as I described, the cells get a massive dose. And these things that get into your body, these elements, are called internal emitters. And they give you a whopping dose of radiation to just a few cells. And what the nuclear people don't understand, I think, is radiation biology. They don't understand pathology. They've got all these formulas and stuff that they work out that I don't even understand. And they say, for instance, they'll take a little tiny piece of radon, and they'll get the dose to those cells, and they'll average that dose out over the whole two lung fields. Get it? They're lying with the data. And that really annoys me intensely as a physician. You're not to lie with scientific data. And in fact, if we lied with our data, we'd be deregistered and we'd be killing patients. Now, I've got to describe to you what radiation actually is, and how it damages cells. There are basically five kinds of radiation. One is X-rays. You know, you do not need your teeth X-rayed every year. That's ridiculous. My ex-husband was a radiologist. They make a lot of money. They're pretty gung-ho about radiation. They don't really think it matters too much. Radiation is cumulative. Each dose you receive adds to your risk of getting cancer. No radiation is safe, and if you notice now in the airports, they've got those damn X-ray machines you have to walk through. Well, what's everyone upset about? Ooh, they might see their naughty bits. Ooh. But it's nothing to do with privacy. It's about getting dosed with radiation. They're taking babies in there, I'm sure pregnant women go through. It's really medically contraindicated, and it's very serious. And that's what we should be getting onto as doctors. So that's X-rays. Don't get your teeth X-rayed every year. If you have a root abscess or a bad tooth, yeah, you need an X-ray, period. And put your foot down with a firm hand and ask your doctor or your dentist why you're having the X-ray. Don't let them be gods and walk over you, right? Challenge them. The breast is a very radiosensitive organ. Little girls in Hiroshima who had no breast tissue had a higher than normal incidence of breast cancer when they grew up because they had a nidus of cells that were going to form their breasts. Very radiosensitive. It's funny because people who have the genes for breast cancer, they need to have, or they do have, mammograms, and yet that may stimulate, you know, the cells that are going to cause cancer. When I've had mammograms, I go into the radiologist and I say, what dose am I getting? They often don't know. I make them look it up. In the olden days, the doses were much higher. I don't shove my breasts in those things anymore. You can use ultrasound now to diagnose breast cancers. There are other ways to do it. It's equivocal, number one. And they often make incorrect diagnoses and people have their breasts taken off and they don't really have cancer. But also they have helped to save lives. So, it's hard to know which way to go. Okay, now, gamma radiation is given off by radioactive materials, internal emitters, which I'll describe in a while, but it's just like X-rays. It goes straight through you, and the minute that the technician says breathe in, hold it, and runs out of the room and goes zap, that's the instant your cells can be damaged. But you do not become radioactive from an X-ray or from exposure to gamma radiation, which we use to treat cancers. Interestingly, radiation causes cancers, but if you zap a cancer with a huge dose of radiation and the cells are rapidly dividing, they're the ones that are sensitive to being killed by radiation, and we hope to cure the cancer, but sometimes a patient 20 years later gets a second cancer from the normal cells having been mutated around the primary cancer, and they get another primary cancer, but of course they've had 20 years more of life. Then there's alpha radiation, and that's emitted from a radioactive atom, and it's composed of two protons and two neutrons, and it's dense in mass. It can be stopped by a piece of paper. You can hold an alpha emitter in your hand. The alpha particle doesn't get through the dead layers of epidermis to damage living cells. It's amongst the most carcinogenic material that we know. Beta radiation is just an electron, a particulate, ejected from a nucleus, and it too causes mutations. Not as bad as... And then there are neutrons, but I won't go into them. There's a man who developed the neutron bomb, which is the ultimate capitalist weapon because it kills people but leaves buildings intact, except the buildings become radioactive. He had a dog, too, that he loved. It's funny, these guys. They work out how to, you know, produce mass genocide, but they still love their dogs.
You are listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott. Author of 11 books, she has been a leading figure in the international movement against nuclear weapons and nuclear power for 38 years.
Now, how does radiation cause cancer? In every cell of the body, there's a nucleus with 46 chromosomes, and this is simplification because genetics really is quite complex now, but there's a gene that controls the rate of cell division called the regulatory gene. And if that is mutated, the DNA molecule, it means that biochemically it's changed, the cell doesn't die, and the mutation sits there for 5 to 60 years. And that's the incubation time for cancer. And that's the ace up the sleeve of the nuclear industry, because you don't know when you get your cancer what caused it. You know, if you live near Three Mile Island and you get breast cancer 20 years later, you haven't a clue what caused it, except if you take that whole exposed population and compare them to a non-exposed population, you'll then find the incidence of cancer is much higher. Many sort of cancers. So the incubation time for cold is 2 days. I sneeze on you, in 2 days you're sneezing. And the same with measles, mumps, chickenpox, pertussis, 3 weeks. But this is a long time, the cryptogenic silent period. And that's why the nuclear industry says, oh, don't worry about it, you know. Anyway, the people who are making it will be dead soon and they won't have to worry about you. So that's called a somatic mutation in a regulatory gene, okay? There are other cells that are much more important than normal body cells, and they happen to be the sperm and the eggs, which carry half the number of genes, and every single gene in the sperm and the egg is imperative for life. Under no circumstances should anyone be exposed to more radiation than background, and in fact it's been background radiation that's produced evolution. When the Earth was really radiologically hot, you know, genes were mutated and fish developed lungs and birds developed wings, and it's because of background radiation. But most mutations are deleterious. They cause disease and or death. Now, and this has occurred over billions of years. So we're talking about a very short time period when we're upping the background radiation and it's going to impact future generations, and that's wicked. The nuclear industry doesn't really understand this. And, oh, incidentally, they say nuclear power doesn't cause global warming. Another blatant lie. If you've ever been to a uranium mine, like in Australia, the trucks they have to put the ore in are about as big as this room. The wheels come up to the height of those windows. How much fossil fuel does it use to fuel those trucks? The huge diggers, you know. Huge amount of fossil fuel is used. You have to dig up 1 million tons of uranium ore to get 1 ton of uranium, because it's all mixed with sand and rock and dirt. And so nuclear power produces a massive quantity of CO2 and other things. The whole infrastructure underlying a nuclear reactor produces about 30% the amount of CO2 produced by a similar-sized gas-fired plant. But as the uranium declines in concentration all over the world, within 10 years, probably a nuclear power plant per se, because of the infrastructure, will produce the same amount of CO2. So to say it produces no global warming is a lie. Yeah. Why are people talking about it? Because the industry spent hundreds of millions of dollars. NPR ads, for God's sake. Time magazine, Scientific American, saying how wonderful it is. Clean, green and cheap. And it's perfect for our children. Those guys should be put in jail. It's the doctors who should lead the charge, because we have to treat the patients who have cancer and the like. So don't believe any of them. They're wrong, including Lovelock and James Hansen and all the rest. So when you mine the uranium, you crush it with a big milling plant, big crushing, and make it into dust. Then you take the uranium to a place called Paducah. Where's Paducah? Kentucky, where they have uranium enrichment plants. And this uranium enrichment plant is a series or cascade of very fine microfilters. So what they do is they turn the uranium into a gas called uranium hexafluoride. And they pass the gas through these tiny micropores. These are made of nickel, these things. And they have thousands and thousands of these nickel plates. So on one side stays the 238 and the other side collects 235, but it takes a long time to get there. Thousands of them, a cascade. And eventually you get 3% enriched. Now in Iran they're using centrifuges to enrich the uranium. This is a very energy consuming process, and it takes 2,500 megawatt coal-fired plants to produce the electricity to enrich the uranium. Oh, what does coal produce when you burn it? Yeah, where does your electricity come from? When you turn on the light, you need to know as a responsible citizen where the stuff's generated. Anyway, so that makes more CO2, those coal-fired plants. And then uranium hexafluoride is a very hot, thermally hot gas, and they've got hundreds of miles of pipes. And so they have to cool them, and there are adjacent pipes with CFC gas in. Now, CFC, what does it do? Destroys the ozone, and that's why everyone my age in Australia has skin cancer. I've had a melanoma. We've got the highest incidence of melanoma in the world because our ozone's very thin. So the nuclear industry has been grandfathered out of the Montreal Protocol, and they use CFC gas to cool the uranium hexafluoride. But these pipes are very old and they leak. So 93% of the very common gas, CFC-114, is released at this uranium enrichment plant. 93% of the gas released in America comes from the nuclear enrichment plant. And that's 10 to 20,000 times more potent as a global warmer than carbon dioxide. You with me? Am I going too fast? No. They don't talk about that. How did I find that? I rang the EPA, and there's a very nice woman there who gave me all this information. Now, when the uranium is enriched, it's then made into little ceramic pellets and packed in zirconium fuel rods 12 feet long and half an inch thick. And 100 tons are taken to a reactor like Indian Point. They take 100 tons of uranium to the reactor. They pack in boron moderating rods, and it's all in water. And they lift out the moderating rods, and we get E equals MC squared. What does that mean? The energy released from splitting of the atom equals the mass of the atom times the speed of light squared. It's the energy released inside the sun. Massive amounts of energy. And so what happens is it gets really hot and the water boils and the steam is taken off, which turns a turbine which generates electricity. So all a nuclear power plant is designed to do is boil water. It's like cutting a pound of butter with a chainsaw. As Einstein said, nuclear power's a hell of a way to boil water. The nuclear power plants use 1 million gallons a minute of water to keep them cool. The water goes back into the Hudson or wherever, relatively radioactive. What with? Tritium, which is a radioactive hydrogen, which is very carcinogenic. The nuclear industry doesn't know what to do about that because you can't prevent tritium getting out. The only thing that prevents tritium escaping is gold because it's so dense. So it gets out of everything. Tritium combines with water, oxygen, to form tritiated water, which goes straight through your skin. It bioconcentrates in the food chain, so if you grow apples or pears or peaches or spinach near the nuclear power plant, you're going to be eating radioactive materials. The other thing it gets out is carbon-14, which lasts for thousands and thousands of years, and that combines right in the DNA molecule. They don't count that either. So they're a routine power plant, and they say, oh, it's just routine. Like at Port Hope, they say there are fugitive emissions of uranium. Fugitive, they release 100 to 600 kilos of uranium a year. And there was a plant called a feed materials plant. Where was that? Does anyone know? And everyone thought they were making dog food. They were making uranium, and they were releasing huge amounts of stuff into the air, and a little boy died of bone cancer, and they tested his bone, and it was chock-a-block full of uranium. Because uranium goes to bone. So, and the other things they release all the time are argon, krypton, like Superman, and xenon. And these don't combine biochemically in the body, but they're absorbed through the lungs and they are very fat soluble and they go to the fatty abdominal pad and upper thighs and what organs are located in that area that are very important. Ovaries and testicles. The most important organs in the human body, premenopause. So, and they're very high energy gamma emitters like X-rays. So people living near nuclear power plants with an inversion system and a fog can be inhaling tritiated water. It might be getting through their skin. They're inhaling carbon-14 and they're inhaling these gases. So the German government just did a study of 16 nuclear power plants and they looked at children less than the age of 5, living less than 5K from the reactor, and they had more than double the incidence of leukemia and a high incidence of cancer. Yet, they say, oh, don't worry about Indian Point, it's safe. There's no danger living anywhere near a nuclear power plant. I was going to say that the terrorists had targeted the Indian Point plants 35 miles from Manhattan, but they thought they were protected by missiles, so they went into the World Trade Towers instead. If they'd gone into Indian Point, Manhattan would be no more forevermore.
This has been the first of a two-part series featuring Dr. Helen Caldicott. Dr. Caldicott has taught at Harvard Medical School, founded numerous activist organizations, and authored 11 books, including Nuclear Power is Not the Answer and If You Love This Planet. In part two, she will talk about the reactor accidents at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island, the dangers of nuclear weapons, and renewable energy's path to a sustainable future.
In fact, I don't really care what you do with your country now because I live mostly in Australia, although I do have a green card. But I care because you could blow up the planet.
Wings is a weekly half-hour radio program by and about women around the world. For more information or to hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Thanks to all our supporters, including your local radio station, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the children's books Mother Nature's Children and Free, Not Free. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
We was in the back of the joint cooling out, and I saw this girl, asked her if she like it like that. Not a head, yes, therefore I didn't stress, let my beat keep knocking, cause we rocking like that. What's your answer?
The rights of tens of thousands of migrants working as living caregivers in Ontario are being neglected. As the name suggests, caregivers give care to those in need of assistance. But who's caring for the rights and needs of migrants working as living caregivers? Migrante Ontario is a non-profit organization advocating for the rights and well-being of migrants working as living caregivers. The passing of Bill C-50 has made it easier for people working in Canadian migrant worker programs to work with temporary status, but harder to gain permanent residency. Working with temporary status in Canada leaves the rights of migrant workers far less protected. However, most migrants who come to Canada are led to believe that they have the chance to become Canadian citizens. interested in getting involved with the Guelph contingent of Migrante Ontario, connect with us at migrante.ontario